People don't leave companies, people leave bosses. This is an old and a proven proverb. Don't believe me? Go to any bar and by default, people start cribbing about their bosses after a few drinks down. But the opposite is also true though. There are good bosses whom you like to work for and have a cordial relationship with. But then there's a third category, these super bosses. Sidney Finkelstein, professor at the Dartmouth College's Tuck School of Business, has authored the book Super Bosses, which is a deep dive into this scarce breed of bosses based on his long research of leaders who have a knack for creating exceptional talent and honing them to take them to great heights. He goes on to explain that these super bosses change the course of the careers of people who work for them and takes it to exponential heights of greatness. It obviously does matter who they bring into their teams, bases, you know, a person's natural talents or just great motivations. But they polish these coals into shining diamonds almost always. They generally have a style of their own for almost everything, right from hiring to firing people who work for them. The author has dissected every trait in detail of people like Ralph Lauren, Gene Roberts, Jake Yatt, and Alice Waters to describe what sets these leaders apart from others. So let us understand in more detail who these super bosses are, how do they function, and where do they come from. Namaste, I'm Shubham Agarwal and you're listening to SOS, Secrets of Storytellers, a podcast where I interview authors and writers from the world of business, literature and many more across the world. Don't miss out the last section where we get to know secrets from the storyteller themselves. Hi Sydney, welcome to Secrets of Storytellers. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Shubham.
Great, great to have you here, Sydney. Sydney, it was a very interesting read and a lot of new things that I could, you know, gather about this special breed of managers, leaders called super bosses, and a very interesting concept. So we'll talk about it more through the discussion. Right. So let us start by understanding, you know, the difference between a bad boss, a good boss and a super boss, like you call it.
I think a lot of people know what a bad boss is, and having now talked about super bosses and worked with companies and workshops around the world, we have a lot of these conversations. And the bad boss is the micromanager. The bad boss takes credit for your hard work. The bad boss is the person you're not happy to wake up in the morning to go to work for. And there's many other versions of the bad boss, and unfortunately, pretty much everyone has had one or more of these bad bosses. The good boss doesn't do those things and is much more of a supportive boss, could be a mentor in fact, and doesn't have these kind of egregious attributes that I just described. But the super boss is a totally different type of leader. The super boss is someone that first of all seeks out talent and original talent, creative talent, in ways that the typical boss doesn't. The super boss is someone that's a real genius at motivation. They understand what makes people tick, and they understand how to get people excited and energized. The super boss is incredibly authentic and focused on a vision that's exciting, that's energizing, that people want to be part of. And the super boss, you know, maybe the number one thing I would say about it is when you work for a super boss, your career is going to accelerate forward at a pace that you probably haven't experienced before. Super bosses help other people get better. Super bosses, another way to say it is super bosses are leaders that create other leaders, which is the highest compliment I think you can give to a leader.
Yeah. Great. Like you said, you know, almost everyone has had an experience of a bad boss. And I think a lot of people suffer because of these bad bosses, sometimes mentally, sometimes intellectually, but most likely in their careers a lot. How damaging can it be to work for a bad manager?
Well, if you stay and you don't leave, it could be, well, what it does is it takes away the enjoyment of work. Mm-hmm. And even that phrase is going to sound odd to some people, the enjoyment of work.
Interesting, yeah.
There are people at work because they need money. And I get that, and they got to survive. And that's true for a lot of people. When we're talking about managers, we're talking about people in organizations, certainly that have more responsibility. That is true, but I think that's not enough. And you won't be as fulfilled as you could be in your own career. So not only is it, you know, on a day-to-day basis not motivating and not exciting, but you yourself are going to be less likely to be able to meet your potential, or even exceed your potential. And that would be a real, shame. And so at the end of the day, any of us that stay with bad bosses for any length of time beyond the absolute minimum, we're paying the bigger penalty, not the bad boss, but we're the one that's paying the penalty.
Right. But, you know, Sydney, I could be wrong in my judgment of a manager. You know, I might not be comfortable with someone who's very strict or someone who's not comfortable with flexible timings, which doesn't really put the onus on any one individual, but just the fact that, you know, we cannot work together. So how do I make out, you know, if a manager is damaging for my career, more importantly, my growth, my future prospects?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. The right person for you might not be the right person for me. The best leaders, super bosses, certainly adapt to the people around them. They customize how they work with people around them so that as long as someone is a high aspiration person that really wants to go for it and really wants to buy into things that the leader is trying to accomplish, when it comes to super bosses, they will make those adjustments. But oftentimes that doesn't happen. And it's the individual that has to adapt to their boss. In fact, think about what people say when there's a new, you know, you get a new team leader that comes in. You know, everyone's talking about, well, what's she like or what's he like? Yeah. And what are we going to have to do now? And how's this going to change? And automatically you're thinking about all the things that you have to do to adapt to the leader. And I think that's much more common than the reverse, but the super boss leader is one that that will make the adjustments, the adaptations to the team, because that's how you get the most out of a team. So, you know, sometimes there's this, it's not a one size fits all. I think that's fair to say. And we all have our own styles, but I think that a good leader should be able to be the right leader for any high aspiration, high talent person on that team.
Right. You have categorized these super bosses into various buckets. This rare species of exceptional leaders. Could you tell us about these categories brief?
Yeah, I will. I just want to say one thing though about the premise of your question, which is that they're these kind of rare breed, and I kind of thought so early on, but I'll tell you what has happened. Certainly in the pre-COVID time, I was out and about a lot and doing a lot of talks and signing books, and people say, you know, I say, who do you want me to make the book out to? And more often than not, they want me to make the book out to their boss.
Interesting.
And it's someone I never heard of in a company I probably didn't even know existed. And they said, now that I heard you speak, I understand that my boss really was a super boss. And so there's way, way more than we probably realize. And that, if you really think about that, if a super boss is even half as good as my research suggests that they are tremendous assets in an organization. They help people get better. They help you accomplish goals at a much faster pace. You hit your targets in your teams. You're more successful. And so the more super bosses we have, the better. And so they're underutilized assets.
So we'll take the word rare out of it. Then.
Yeah.
We'll not say rare anymore.
But, you know, my comment just now is not so much to, you know, make an adjustment to what you said.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But to really highlight one of the things that we learned. I want people to know that there are super bosses everywhere. We need to pay more attention to them. Senior leaders need to seek them out. And it also means that any one of us, any one of your listeners, can become a super boss themselves. It's not like a magic. It's not like you're born that way. You certainly can do that. Now, to the question of the types of super bosses, there were three types that I found. And in a nutshell, they were, the first is maybe the category we think of the most. I call them nurturers. They nurture people. And those are the types of leaders maybe we think of when we think about people that help others get better. And certainly that was a big category. And their motivation was that they valued their role as a leader in helping other people become more successful. The second category typically come from more creative industries, the Ralph Laurens of the world, and call them iconoclasts. And the iconoclasts are leaders that because they're creative themselves, they like to surround themselves with other really interesting, high potential people, because it helps them get better. It helps them think about their craft and their trade and their business. And by doing that, they end up helping other people get better themselves. And then the third category is the one that kind of gets the most press, because I call them glorious bastards. And so these are really tough bosses. They're not easy to work for. Mm-hmm. Larry Ellison is kind of my, from Oracle, is my poster boy of that. No one's going to say they're easy. They are difficult. But what they understand is that to succeed, they need to have the world's best teams. They need to have tremendous talent. And so they help you get better. They push you to get, you have no choice but to get better, or they're going to get rid of you. And so it's not for everyone, but if you can handle the pressure of working for one of these glorious bastards, the acceleration of your career is incredible.
Interesting. I'm already bucketing the managers that I've worked for into one of the three categories, the ones that I think are super bosses. I'm sure all of our listeners are as well. But you know, what is, obviously, as someone who's working for a super boss, there's a lot of motivation. There's a selfish interest that I have. But what's in it for a super boss? You know, what is his or her motivation to propel careers for people who are working for him or her?
Yeah, so it's interesting to think about. Part of it depends on the type of super boss. So even the glorious bastards who might not care about the people on an interpersonal level that work for them at an interpersonal level very much, what motivates them is they just want to win. They want to be great. They want to be successful. And they know to do that, they need to really have great talent. But this is also true for the nurturers and for the iconoclasts as well. The equation is clear. The super boss approach to leadership, to developing talent, to managing people actually leads to better results, actually leads to bottom line improvements. And there's not a manager around who doesn't care about that, especially when they have KPIs, you know, and incentives associated with that. So even if they don't care about people, and the nurturers certainly do care a lot about them, but even if they didn't, it still would be beneficial. But for the people that do care, the legacy, the impact, the meaningfulness really of helping other people accomplish their goals, very powerful motivation for those people.
Right. Wonderful. While I was, you know, reading the book, I was curious to understand, where do these super bosses come from? You know, I understand, you know, that they make great leaders, they make great managers for the years ahead. But what is their past? How did they become such great leaders? Were they also led by super bosses in all the cases in their early careers?
Yeah. So sometimes they were, other times they were not. It's really interesting because I was looking at, in some ways, I was looking at the genesis of how an organization becomes a talent factory. And you think about some of the great talent factories that are out there. Companies like McKinsey, Google, Tata, and they have this long track record. And we used to say that about General Electric. I think it's even with GE's huge problems, I think there's still some truth to that. But where does it come from? How do you start that machine? And it starts with people. That's what the genesis is. And it's these people, many of these people that I ended up interviewing and profiling in this book. And then the other thing I would say is what I did is I reverse engineered what they did. So rather than try to say, okay, where did they come from? How did they end up that way? The fact of the matter is they did. And so I reverse engineered them. And then I said, okay, here's actually the stuff that happened, whether they intended it or not. Some of them did, some of them didn't. Regardless of how they got there, this is what they did. And now by reverse engineering it, we now have a model. We have a program that says, okay, if you want to become more like that, and if you want to have the benefits that come with being a super boss leader, here's how you can do that. You know, if you take a biological metaphor, an evolutionary metaphor, there are mutations that occur throughout the history of any species, and those mutations that lead to greater survival are going to they're going to confer an evolutionary advantage, and therefore they will be repeated. Well, I'm kind of helping along that process when it comes to leadership and management by doing this reverse engineering and telling people and teaching people this is how you do it.
Which is wonderful. I agree with you. Our listeners would have two kinds of people right now, what I can think of. One, who want to work for super bosses, and second, who want to be super bosses themselves, you know, depending on what level of the careers they are at. Let's start with the first one first. How do I seek a super boss? How do I find a super boss and work for her or him?
So this requires some work. Of course, you could be lucky, step one is knowing what a superboss is and how a superboss behaves. So at least that way, when you see it, you'll know it. In fact, the second part of what we'll get to, I think, will help your listeners understand this is what a superboss looks like. So I'm not going to say all that right now. Mm-hmm. But then there are some things you can actually do, either in an interview process or just by paying attention in a company. So, for example, and this is probably more true in a bigger company than a smaller company because there's just more managers around. But you know, it might even be possible in a smaller organization. Pay attention to where the job openings are and how long those job openings stay. So, for example, if you're a superboss leader, you know, people come and go, people move on. One of the things superbosses do is because they accelerate people's careers, some of those people are going to go move on to bigger jobs. So there will be some job openings. And the question is, how long does it take to fill? And it turns out that it doesn't take long at all. There's hardly ever any dead time in superboss teams where they just can't find people to fill the job. And that's because somehow people have started to figure it out.
Okay, that's such a cool observation.
Yeah, so you have to pay attention to that. And you know, by definition, that means it's harder to get that type of job because it closes quicker. But at least you're going to be alert to it. A second thing you can do is certainly in meetings, especially when you get to meet or at a meeting with people that are not in your direct boss or bosses, or you know, it's more of a company-wide or division-wide group of people. It could be town halls, could be all sorts of things. Look at what people do. Look at how they talk. Look at how they behave. And again, you know, we'll talk about some of the things they do, so people will be a bit more clued into that. This is my third suggestion. When you're looking for a job, and you finally get to the interview with the person that will be your boss, which doesn't happen right away because you're going through recruiters and HR people usually, but eventually you get to the people you're going to work with, and especially the person who's going to be your boss. And when you get to that stage, you'll have questions about the job and all kinds of things. But I would ask about the boss's job herself or himself, which often people don't even ask about that. I kind of think about it as an innocent question, but it's not really an innocent question. The question I would ask is, could you share a little bit about some of the people that have worked for you over the last few years and where they are today?
Yeah.
And it's a trick question, but it's a friendly question, right? So you can ask it. It's not going to upset anyone. But what you're listening for is, first of all, does your boss even know who used to work for them? Are they even alert to that? If super bosses will always know. They'll be able to reel off the names one after another. The other thing you're looking for is, well, did some of the people that work for your prospective bosses, you know, they moved up in their careers? Has working for that boss actually been helpful for their careers? And superboss leaders will know that. And in fact, superboss leaders will also speak with pride about how so-and-so who worked for them for 5 years is now running this business in this part of the company or what have you. And so they'll be clued in to their talent pool that they helped develop. And they'll share that with you. If they have nothing to say about that, then that tells you something as well.
Right. Great. I think trick questions, interesting questions, but definitely very helpful to seek out a superboss. So let's get to the second part of it. If I want to be a superboss myself, how do I start on that journey?
Well, part of it is a mindset. Mm-hmm. I've heard from many people that have told me, yeah, this sounds great, but I don't have the time. While I get that, I don't get that too. Because could you imagine any world where if your team gets better, you yourself will not get better? You yourself will not be more successful. I don't think that exists. The stronger your team, the more you can delegate, the more you can count on them, the better their performance. Of course, your performance is going to be better. So when people say, you know, I don't have the time, it's a cop-out. So that's why I say the first thing is about a mindset. Get rid of the excuses and actually give it a try. And it turns out that there's plenty of entry points that you can do. The book we're talking about is Superbosses, of course. A couple of years after that, I wrote another book called The Superboss Playbook that has exercises and activities that could help people become more superboss-like. And in fact, if you looked at that, or your listeners looked at that, there are 40 different activities that you can choose from, whichever make most sense for you, that'll get you started. But a couple of specific suggestions that I have found to be useful. touched on this briefly before, but let me be a little bit clearer now. And it's around customization. So my advice, spend a little bit of time with the people working on your team. I know this is a bit tougher now in a COVID world where many people are at least partially remote or fully remote. But that doesn't mean you still can't talk to them, can't have, you know, Zooms and other things, one-on-one. And try to really understand that person, not only what is their job, but who are they? What's their situation? How do they like to work? What is their style? How do they like to interact? You know, people are, you know, you said it earlier, people are different. Not everybody likes to work the same way. And actually, I think in this hybrid world that we're in, it's even more important because some people are very, very comfortable working, you know, remotely. They never thought they would have been, I'm sure, just 2 years ago, but we've all learned how to do it. And some people are very, very comfortable with it and they're actually way more productive. Other people really thrive on the interaction. And, you know, every company, different companies have different rules. You can't just have people show up if you're not allowed to do that. But I think we're entering a new stage now where there's going to be a lot more variability in how we interact, and the hybrid model will be the dominant model in terms of work. And so you could try to customize how you work with each person. Why should everybody in the team be remote? Why should everybody in the team have to show up at work? Why not figure out what works best for each individual? Of course, recognizing that when people have to work together, you have to kind of optimize around a team level. But I would do that in terms of workflow and work style. But I'd also ask each person in my team, you know, what are your goals? What are you striving for? What would you like to do? You know, what's your next stage? And imagine your boss asked you, you know, what would you really like to be doing in another year or two or 5 years? And you're allowed to change this. Nobody's going to hold you to this. But, you know, what kind of job are you thinking of? Or what kind of responsibilities or role are you thinking of? And then say, okay, I could see that. I think you're going to need to enhance your experience and your skill sets in a few different ways to get there, to put yourself in a position to do what you want to do, which whatever that happens to be, you're probably going to need these couple of skill sets. Let's see if over the next year or two, we can find opportunities for you to grow into those skill sets. And I'll look for ways to do that. Now, imagine you did that for your boss, did that for you. How would you feel towards that boss?
Very, very powerful, I think.
And the loyalty that you get from people is amazing. What I just described, you can do all of that. Because I think it's, I didn't like when you used the word rare before, but I think what I'm talking about now, it's not nearly as common as it should be. It'll stand out. You know, if you were to do that, you're off and running as a super boss, because that's one of the hallmarks of super boss leaders.
This is great, Sydney. I think the listeners must be scribbling down questions for their bosses for tomorrow, or they must be finding activities to take on with their teams tomorrow. Either ways, I think it'll be great. And I'm sure many people would pick up the book or gift to their bosses, either to teach them or to tell them that they've been a great resource, they've been a great help in their careers. We'll move to the next section with that. This is the concluding section of the podcast. And kind of an interesting one because it's a common across. And I want to ask you one secret about the book, or, you know, your journey while you were going through the book, you were authoring the book, that probably you've not spoken a lot about in the open.
You asked earlier, you know, how did these people become super boss leaders? Now the question I'm addressing is why did somebody write a book? They did. Why this topic? This interesting thing, maybe you've asked that question to other authors in other fields, but why did I write this book? And I think it's because, and I didn't know this started, I wasn't alert to this when I started. It wasn't like a conscious motivation, but on reflecting and thinking back about it, I think it's true. I had a couple of super boss leaders way before I ever created that term that changed my life. And I wanted to, later I thought about it and I honored them. But I didn't start that way. And you know, for example, in high school, my ninth grade English teacher, it was English composition. You're writing stories and, you know, fiction or what have you. And, And I was just a kid who played sports and hung out with his friends in high school. I wasn't, I was a good student, but I certainly wasn't focused like I ended up becoming. But he sent back one of my papers, one of my stories, and he said, you know, this is, he said, you know how to write, Sydney. You really know how to write. You have a gift, and you should think about it. And of course, that hit me over the head. I had no idea. My gift was watching TV and playing sports with my friends. I didn't know anything about that. And it opened my eyes to something that I hadn't never, ever considered. I became a really good student after that, because I wanted to prove him right. This is also a very common thing you see with super bosses and their teams. The super bosses give their team members so much that they want to prove their super boss right for dedicating that energy and that time to them. And I'll give you another example.
Sure.
When I was in college, undergrad, not in college, when I had my first job, not first job again, but one of my first jobs as an instructor, as a professor, before I, it was actually the college, the university I had gone to myself. It's called Concordia University. It's in Canada. It's a very big university. I graduated. I went to do something else, and they asked me to come back to teach. And I was, I think, 23.
Wow.
And I didn't think I knew anything. I didn't know anything about teaching. 2 years earlier, I had graduated. So it was a crash course in, it's like challenging somebody, right? Creating that opportunity. But what happened is I had a 2-year contract, and I did very well in the classroom. I worked really hard at it. I did very well. But when my contract came up for renewal, the chairman of the department did not renew it. And I was shocked.
Okay.
Because I wanted it to be renewed. I was enjoying it. It was fun. And I was good at it. And he didn't renew it. And he said, if you want to do this, you really need to get a PhD. You need to learn how to do research. And of course, he was not only to give me that advice, where he was losing a kind of a, let's say, a talented person, but I was cheap compared to other people because I did not have a PhD and I was younger and they didn't have to pay me as much as they paid other people. So, but what he was doing is he was pushing me to, he saw my interest and some of my aspiration and potential, and he gave me no choice, either do it or find something else to do. And super bosses will do that. And that, those two things, those two little anecdotes that I'm sharing with you were life-changing anecdotes or events in my life. And I think that's part of what was behind this book.
Those are just beautiful. I think those are just beautiful. And to be able to do that to a student in ninth grade is just wonderful from someone who could see so far ahead into the future. So, wow. Thank you so much for sharing that, Sydney.
You're welcome. And it's also a role model for me as a teacher now, about what is possible for other people.
Right. Great. It was wonderful having you here, Sydney, on the show. Thank you so much for sharing so intricate details about how you got where you are and about the concept of super bosses. It was a wonderful discussion. I hope you enjoyed it as well.
It was really my pleasure. Great questions, great discussion. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sydney. And I'm sure a lot of listeners would love to pick up your book, whosoever wants to. We have dropped the link in the details to this episode. If you want to write to us, or if you have any questions for Sydney, you can write to us, or you can reach out to him on his social media handles. Thank you. Until the next secret and the next storyteller, this is Shubham signing off.